Welcome to the Trade Show Podcast, the home for conversations with global leaders in the trade show and events business. Our show will bring you face to face with experts who speak about the possibilities and trajectories of this $50 billion industry. I'm your host, Shubhanjan Sarkar, founder of PitchLink, the next generation visitor engagement platform, where our mission is to make conversion easy. Welcome to this episode of the Trade Show Podcast. Thank you for listening and your continued feedback. If you have suggestions or you want me to dig in with a specific guest, please write to me at shubhanjan@pitch.link or message me on LinkedIn. Both links available in the show notes. I'm excited to introduce you to our guest today, Lee Ali, founder and CEO of Expo Stars Interactive, which he founded in 2007.
One of the elements for me is that how do companies actually see exhibitions? Is it a sales process or is it a marketing process? Okay. And the strategy is driven of how you actually believe exhibitions can actually help you. Are you actually going there to generate sales leads or are you there to create brand awareness? Okay. And in B2B sales or in the B2B environment, nobody actually comes with a checkbook and says, I've had a great conversation, I'm going to buy straight away, okay, and gives you a check for $1 million, $2 million. It doesn't work that way. And what exhibitions are the first step in that customer journey.
Lee is an international speaker, entrepreneur, business coach, mentor, sales strategist, and a qualified IMA practitioner. He's widely regarded as the go-to source for attendee engagement and trade show exhibition performance. Lee's passion from very early on in his business career has been understanding what makes people buy and how to truly connect with them so that they're deeply engaged with what you offer. Lee is the founder and managing director of Expo Stars Interactive, an award-winning trade show performance agency that supports exhibitors worldwide to engage more attendees to their booth, convert them into qualified sales leads, raise their brand awareness, and deliver measurable results. Since 2007, the Expo Stars team has been supporting exhibitors at all the major global exhibitions, including Arab Health, Mobile World, CES, Jitex, BOMA, HP Discover, Cisco Live, Black Hat, Microsoft Convergence, Con Expo, and many more. Now, on to another insightful and informative episode with Lee Ali. Lee, welcome to the Trade Show Podcast. I'm delighted that we are talking and talking of something quite different from what we have been doing last few episodes. And I think that's why I'm very excited that this conversation is going to be quite insightful from the normal ones that we have been having, and insightful in a different way, a side of trade shows we seldom get to talk about. Welcome.
Thank you, Shubhanjan. Thank you for having me. And I'm intrigued about where our conversation is going to lead us.
Absolutely. Before we actually go into the chat, would you like to talk a bit about what you are doing and what Expo Stars is into?
Sure. I'm the founder and MD of a company called Expo Stars Interactive. We call ourselves a trade show performance agency, in that what we do is we help exhibitors to engage proactively and making sure that they actually have an attendee engagement strategy that actually helps them not only to engage attendees at the booth, but also create a holistic approach in terms of the pre-show marketing, the engagement on the booth, and then the follow-up process as well. And how do we do that? We have a framework called TEO. You're familiar with SEO. So TEO is Trade Show Engagement Optimization. And we look at five pillars being how does the exhibition strategy align with the business growth plan of the business? Then we look at the customer journey before, during, and after the event. Then we look at selecting the right people on the booth and making sure that they can actually deliver the journey. And then we look at the metrics And the most important aspect of all of it is the follow-up process, because that's where the gold is. So we run a TEO audit for companies, trying to understand what they're doing well, what they could improve. And then we look at workshops to upskill the booth staff on engagement techniques. And then lastly, we provide professional booth staff who can actually engage attendees. And we do that across the globe in about, I think at the last count, we had worked in about 55 countries.
That's a lot of countries.
Yeah.
It seems that exhibitors do not necessarily see the importance of training their booth staff. And they believe that sales folks who are already selling their product are good enough to go to exhibition and talk to customers. And to a great extent, it's logical, right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, sales, one of the elements for me is that how do companies actually see exhibitions? Is it a sales process or is it a marketing process? Okay. Mm-hmm. And the strategy is driven of how you actually believe exhibitions can actually help you. Are you actually going there to generate sales leads, or are you there to create brand awareness? Okay. And in B2B sales or in the B2B environment, generally, nobody actually comes with a checkbook and says, I've had a great conversation, I'm going to buy straight away, okay, and gives you a check for $1 million, $2 million. It doesn't work that way. And what exhibitions are the first step in that customer journey, okay? The first step is discovery and trying to understand and trying to really understand, you know, both parties, challenges, you know, on behalf of the exhibitor, and obviously the offerings of the exhibitor, and then obviously the challenges and aspirations of the attendee. And it's kind of a matchmaking process, and you have to, and it's a moment of discovery, okay, in that first step of building that relationship. But the challenge I've found over the past few years is that exhibitors don't have the education, okay, formal education about how to exhibit, how to actually create an exhibition strategy. And usually the person who ends up organizing the exhibition or running the exhibition process is either the marketing person or somebody who's been handed down the job, okay, from the sales and marketing team or the executive team, and they've not been formally trained about how to actually put together the exhibition strategy and actually align it then with the sales and the marketing departments, okay? And part of the job, again, that we do as part of the TEO process is to get all the stakeholders together of the company and really get them to understand what exhibitions actually mean to each department. Okay. And until companies, you know, take a holistic and structured approach, they're always going to struggle with actually getting an ROI or an ROO from their exhibitions.
So Lee, I have a quick question there. So when you are looking at exhibitors, and obviously it will vary from industry to industry. So I would not be sort of generalizing it, but there are certain brands in every industry who are not coming to any exhibition to sell. They are there because they want to flex their muscles. It's really a marketing exercise end to end. There is
absolutely
nothing else.
Right? Yeah.
And then there is a second tier who are doing both, perhaps. They're saying, okay, I need to be present. I'm aspirational. I want to build a brand, but I also need revenue. I'll not be able to justify purely. And then there is the third tier, and then on, they're really looking at lead generation as the primary exercise, and also sort of assuring their existing customers that we exist. Don't worry, we have a plan. We are with you, and so on and so forth. So that marketing part is very limited to sort of existing customers. And those are the ones they'll take out for dinner in the night, or they're going to spend, you know, time doing something. But So broadly, when I look at exhibitions, this is the broad breakup. Would you yeah. think that is sort of accurate?
That is, yeah. I mean, you have, three or four different types of exhibitors, okay, all with different strategies, okay? You're absolutely right. There are companies who want to flex their muscle. Then there are companies who feel the pressure, okay, to actually go to that exhibition because they've always done it. Okay.
Yeah.
And how do you actually break that pattern? They may necessarily not see any return on investment. They may not get return on objectives, but because they're the market leader in that industry, they are under pressure to keep their presence at that show because they don't want to worry their customers or the industry as well. But on that point, I mean, you look at Apple, for example. They don't really go to any big B2B shows. I think they actually focus on their own events.
Okay? Right.
And really it's a question for the business leaders of that exhibitor who wants to flex their muscle to actually understand that, you know, in this day and age, they don't actually have to flex their muscle. Okay.
Yeah.
They can actually create their own events. Okay.
Yeah.
And actually take care of their prospects and customers and bring them together in the same room. Okay. And I think where, big exhibitions do make a difference is on the international side. So if they, where they can actually have many conversations in the same hall. Okay. Whereas, I think at UFI, at the UFI conference last week or the week before in Cologne, the German Association said that exhibitions you can't really replace because if you didn't have exhibitions, you'd have to do a lot of conversations. You would actually have to go and do 30 meetings in a country, right? Whereas an exhibition can actually allow you to have many conversations over the course of 3 days to your marketplace. So you have to actually look at that. So, but if I was an international exhibitor and there was an event, let's say, in my country in UK, I would actually probably look at the value and say, well, I know everyone in the UK. We have our clients. Why do I need to spend that much money, okay, to go to that exhibition, okay, and expose myself and my customers to all of the competitors?
Yeah.
So this is a balancing act. When you look at your business growth strategy, is to look at, you know, what contribution will exhibitions make, okay, to your business growth plan. Okay, so if your business growth plan is going to be that you need to increase your revenue by, let's say, $500,000, okay, then what you have to do is really look at exhibitions in a whole different way, okay, because you realize, okay, to get an ROI of $500,000, okay, how much business can you get out of that trade show? How many relationships will you need to create at that show? And your whole strategy changes for that trade show, okay, when you look at it from that perspective.
Absolutely. Two quick follow-up, one observation, one question. Yeah. One observation is that when you look at the tech industry, especially the ones like Apple, you look at Salesforce, for example, Google, all these people can afford to create their own events because there is a whole ecosystem which is functioning on their platform, and it's much simpler for them to get 100 partners or 500 partners. I mean, if you go to Dreamforce, that's what you'll see. Literally thousands of people come there because they all survive on that platform.
Yeah.
Right? It's not true for an equally big company, say General Motors or Toyota, to do that.
Yeah.
Because although
they
do have ecosystem partners,
it's
not as large. So they have to go to an auto show. So I think tech is a slightly different space, so to say. They can much more easily do their own things than other companies.
Oh, absolutely. The
other point I wanted to ask also, I mean, it's a question, as I said, you mentioned that people think that we don't want to expose our customers to our competitors.
Yeah.
You know, when I talk to B2B sales folks, I hear this a lot.
Yeah.
And the assumption is the customer is a moron. As if he doesn't know the competitive landscape, as if he's not looking already, as if he doesn't have those competitors reaching out to them voluntarily.
Yeah, yeah.
So you don't need to be in a trade show to call them or to invite them and get them exposed to others. I think they're pretty much exposed anyway.
Absolutely, yeah.
Why do you think that kind of a mindset still persists?
I think it's a fear of loss, isn't it? Because we spend a lot of time trying to win and engage those clients. And it's that natural fear that, you know, of losing a customer, okay, especially to a competitor. Mm. And we're kind of insecure, aren't we, as business people? And so I think that plays a part. But I think, again, with the world of trade shows, I think the biggest difference is that they can actually meet people face to face and that they can actually physically see the solutions. I think that's what drives the fear. Okay.
Absolutely.
Whereas cold calling, okay, you know, no doubt my clients get, you know, hundreds of cold calls like I do every day.
Yeah.
Okay. But there's a distance. Okay. But in an exhibition hall, that distance disappears. Okay.
Right.
And I think that's what drives the biggest fear is that, you know, serendipity is, you know, one of the great things about exhibitions. And if somebody is casually walking past one of your competitors and they look at something and it catches their eye and then they start to investigate further and they think, oh, why hasn't so-and-so told me about this kind of solution? Okay.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So you look at that kind of psychology and I think that's where the fear of loss actually comes from at a trade show.
Yes. And just to add to what you just said, I think business events, trade shows, possibly are the best show of intent. This is one thing we had discussed the other day.
Yeah.
That, I mean, what is the intent signal? All these large companies which sell intent signals, what are they selling you really? They're really selling you a digital footprint they're able to capture, including search terms that somebody's putting into Google and sort of resolve it to their IP address and saying X company or X person nowadays is looking for Y. Yeah. And since you sell Y, he is showing intent to buy your stuff, right? So this is it. This is it. And a lot of it is completely wrong. Not to mention because somebody searching for something doesn't mean he's going to buy it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
And suddenly you have got this 100 hounds behind you because you search for a term, right? But that's okay.
Yeah.
The point is that I think if we and intent is a very important signal, obviously.
Of course, yeah.
Nothing is a bigger signal than somebody walking into a trade show.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, the unique value of business trade shows, even consumer trade shows, but business trade shows more than ever.
Yeah.
So I completely agree. Serendipity is a byproduct, very happy byproduct. But the fact that somebody has walked in and is going to a particular stall or looking around, so they may be in different parts. Like you mentioned just before we started that we should look at the entire journey of the buyer. Absolutely. Because if he's at the very beginning of the journey and you have been able to connect, you have a very good chance that you'll be at the table when the discussion happens. If it is very late, maybe you are column fodder, as they say.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think just to add to your point, it's... when somebody enters the hall, they're at, you know, one of like, you know, I'm not sure how many stages there are, but they're at a stage of where They could be discovering new products or services. But the key thing is when they actually enter into a hall is that they're curious.
Yeah.
Okay. And that is, if they are curious, that's half the battle won as a seller or as an exhibitor. Okay. Because that's what you want. And then it's our job as exhibitors, okay, to get them even more curious, okay, to stop, yes, to listen, okay, and then obviously to follow up, okay?
Yeah.
And I think that is the holistic part of exhibiting that a lot of exhibitors don't actually grasp the concept of.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Let's move to your core activity, which is also providing you with such a unique perspective and over such a long period of time, Lee. And it brings back to the original discussion where we started. Why is it that people do not understand the need for training for trade shows? And let's keep it in mind, and I know these are oft repeated statistics, 40% of a company's budget is spent in trade shows, marketing budget, right? And if you are not the top company, which means you have enough money to burn, you have lots of cash flow and lots of profits, so it doesn't matter. You're not really looking at ROI that instant. But if you are someone who is actually trying to strategically use it to move it forward, like you said, you want to add another 500,000, 1 million, 2 million to your top line, and obviously a sizable portion of that to the bottom line, this is a great place to do it. Yet, two things don't get done. A, we don't train our people to get the most out of it.
Yeah.
Most of them don't have a plan. I mean, I talked to other guests. They said people go to trade shows without any plan.
Yeah.
And which will sound weird, right?
Yeah.
And the second thing, no plan for follow-up.
Yeah.
And both these things you are looking at so closely across so many industries, so many customers. Tell us, what's going on?
Yeah, I think it's all down to that holistic approach, really, you know, starting with understanding the exhibition engagement process, okay? And one of the things I like to highlight is that in your day-to-day business, you wouldn't want to hire a HR person, for example, to do your accounting. Okay. you wouldn't want somebody from the shop floor coming up and doing the admin work. All right. So it's really in our day-to-day businesses, we are actually hiring specialists for each element of our business. Okay. So that, you know, because we get best practice, we have somebody who's knowledgeable, somebody who's got the skill set to be able to deliver that function of the business. And this is what we tend to forget when we come to setting our exhibition strategy, because the engagement process, guess what, also requires specialist skill sets. Okay. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the engagement journey, I just mentioned that we have to physically stop people. How do we grab attention? Okay. The booth can actually do one part, and that's where the creative design and all of that comes in, and your booth attractions, and you can stop people. But the first impression is all down to you, the first person who actually approaches you as an attendee and says, hello, okay, what brings you to the event? Okay, it's that first element, okay? And there are certain types of people in your team who will actually not feel comfortable actually doing that. Okay, they need to be the most outgoing people who can actually handle the rejection, okay, who've got the energy, okay, to stand on their feet 8 hours a day, okay, just talking to every single person or approaching every single person that walks past, okay. Now, everyone in your team will be able to do that. Some of them will not feel comfortable, okay. So you really need to understand, okay, what is our customer journey look like? Okay, so the first part I've just mentioned is the proactive engagement of the attendee, where you stop them and say hello, and hopefully engage them in conversation, break the ice, and then qualify them, okay, to see if they're a good fit for your business. But what do we do, or what do businesses do, or the exhibitors? they put the select people, they say, right, you're coming to the exhibition, all of you stand here, okay, and just talk to people as they come, okay? And what happens? The attendees come up and they ask you a question like, so tell me, what is it that you do? And guess what? Our sales teams or marketing teams, whoever's on the booth, they give a 10 to 15 minute pitch about everything that company is doing. And guess what? The attendee says, well, thanks very much for your time. It's not something I'm actually interested in. And they walk away. Whereas if you have a strategic approach of filtering people as you approach them, you will actually understand who they are, whether they're a decision maker or an influencer, okay, what their challenges or aspirations are, what they're looking to find at the exhibition, okay, once you know that information, then you can actually personalize the demonstration, okay, to them, or facilitate a personalized experience on the booth for them. All right. So the second job then is to really understand the pitch. Okay. So be able to answer any questions, technical questions they have about the products or services. So you need a person who understands your business and your products inside out. Okay. Because if they're not able to answer the questions, the attendees are actually put off. Okay. Yeah. Because according to research by IAEE, 89% of attendees, okay, go to an exhibition to learn something, okay? And their biggest frustration is that they speak to booth staff who don't actually know the answers, so they leave frustrated, okay? Yeah. So that was quite a high figure as well, actually.
Yeah.
And then obviously at the exhibition booth, you might have hospitality experiences in Europe and Asia. Mm. We're very strong believers in being hospitable by having food and drink. Okay. So you need people who are very good at customer service in terms of creating a positive first impression, creating a welcoming and warm environment. Okay. And getting people settled in. So creating that kind of environment. So you need people who are customer focused. They've been trained in hospitality. Okay. And then you need a person who is like a captain, a leader, who can actually make sure that everyone is doing their job, okay? They can move the rotors, they can do the briefings before the event and after the event. So it does require a very strategic approach, and it requires an exhibitor to actually think about what jobs need doing on the booth, and then be able to actually select and handpick the people who are actually suitable for those job roles and actually allocate those job roles. So it becomes a team environment. In one of the workshops that I do, I look at an example of what do the best performing teams have in common. Okay, you look at a football team, you look in your case, look at the cricket team, okay? So everyone has a specific job role within that team. And they do it really, really well. And exhibitions is no different. So, and I think that's what exhibitors actually forget, thinking that they will build the booth, they take four or five people, just plonk them on the booth, okay, and they will be able to field the questions. But what they don't think about is that strategic process of that attendee journey on the booth. Okay, so, and again, there's four jobs that you're doing on the booth, and they've got to recruit people and select people within their team that can actually do those four jobs absolutely spot on.
It's such a critical thing you just mentioned. And I think that when we are investing, say, $20,000-$30,000 in an exhibition booth, and this is not easy. I have spoken to literally hundreds of exhibitors, and they... Yeah. Really crib and say, look, for every plug point they want to charge us $500 for every television that I hire, and I only have to hire from their people. Yeah. I cannot bring in a television on my own. I have to pay $1,000. They're okay with that, but they would not A, spend money training people and orienting them and actually spending time to do that.
Yeah.
A. B, if they don't have the right people,
Yeah.
For whatever reason, they would not consider hiring someone else, and then that becomes a cost.
Yeah.
Yet you have a sunk cost, which is significant, but you would not add maybe 20% to that.
Yeah.
And make that 30,000 work better. Where what's going on? I mean, is it the finance guys? Because somebody told me that actually, you know what? The CFO doesn't see ROI, and they're very reluctant to add more money to it.
Yeah. Well, does it actually need more money? Okay. I think it's just priorities and on where the exhibitors actually spend the money. Okay. In the Middle East, you look, for example, you know, you look at all the exhibit booths and they're full of the bells and the whistles, but what difference are they actually making? Okay. Whereas 85% of an exhibitor's success is all down to the people that you actually have on the booth.
Yeah.
Okay. So 85% of your success is down to the people. Then why spend 100% on the booth and not on your people? Okay.
Yeah.
So that's what, and again, I think it's all down to education. Okay. Making sure that these exhibit planners, whoever is in the company looking after the exhibition process, is actually educated on what elements of that exhibiting process is actually going to make the difference when it comes to achieving ROI or the return on objectives. Okay. And it's really look at that strategically, because I think that's where the disconnect is, because exhibit planners are being told that we have this fantastic space, you know, whether it's 18 square meters or whatever it is, and we have to make it look good. Okay. But looking good and having a functional booth is two different things.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I think when you start looking at it strategically and in terms of what objectives you want to achieve, I've always been critical about exhibitors because they start with the booth design. But what they should be doing is starting with the outcomes.
Yeah.
What they're actually looking for. Okay. And then work backwards. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is what's not happening on the exhibition floor. And again, I did a couple of, I did a session about exhibitor education. Whose responsibility is it anyway? Is it the exhibitor, or is it the organizer, or is it at the university level or business training level, where we need to educate these people on how to make exhibitions pay for them? Okay. Or do we need to train the CFOs on ROI, achieving ROI from a lot of organizers run these exhibitor days where they offer training, but what tends to happen is the junior people tend to come, okay, and the lead is not present, and I think it needs education at the C level to really hit home the message that exhibitors need a holistic strategy that ties in with their sales, marketing, and business growth plan to actually be able to achieve that return on investment and return on objectives.
I agree. And, you know, one of the thoughts that I'm sort of coming to me is that one of the reasons is, again, part of the pervasive problem in sales, nothing to do with exhibitions, that is not knowing your customer.
Yeah.
So because you do not know your customer, you cannot have meaningful conversation. Even if you know that this customer is coming from this person or from this part of the industry, you really don't know what problems they face. You are never taught those. You are basically winging it from day to day.
Yeah.
And you are basically trying to have meetings and pushing it up the ladder, and somebody senior comes in. You have no clue.
Yeah.
And that sort of reflects when you are in the exhibition floor.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
It's time for a short break. Stay with us. After the break.
Don't get me wrong. Audience personas do help in terms of a marketing strategy and what have you. But when it comes to sales, there is nothing like having that one-to-one conversation, building rapport with them, building an understanding, and then talking about, you know, their pain points and aspirations. Okay. And at that level, it's all about having basic communication skills, and that now takes me on to the challenge that we're facing right now, is that everyone is putting technology in the way of a good one-to-one conversation.
You are listening to a Bizcast Audio Original. Podcasting is one of the fastest growing content marketing avenues today. We can help you exploit this largely untapped marketing opportunity. We can craft your audio strategy and leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that smartphone penetration provides. It is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to target audiences. Welcome back. I'm Shubhanjan Sarkar, your host for the Trade Show podcast and founder of PitchLink, the visitor engagement platform. Let's dive right back into the episode.
I always say to my team and all the exhibitors that we look at is that you need a PhD in your customers' problems.
Yeah.
Or aspirations. Yeah. And once you train your salespeople in your customers' issues and challenges, they have a wider perspective. Okay.
Right.
And then they can look at different angles. Okay. Whereas we give them a script and say, right, this is what you're selling. And I mean, if you look at how many cold calls you actually have, okay, I receive, 20 or 30 at least a day, and they come to me with a script. Okay. And I say, no. And they put the phone down. Okay. Whereas, the principle that I believe in is that start with the human first, okay? Start with the human connection, okay? Who are you, okay? What have you been doing today, okay? Who's your favorite football team, okay? And once you start conversations on a human level, okay, you try to understand the human being, okay? Because everyone is different, okay? Yes, we all have audience personas, okay, and this you know, the whole thing driven by, you know, the tech companies about, you know, having building a persona for your customers and trying to understand that they're 35 years old and, you know, they have 2.3 kids and all of this, right? But
yes.
Every person that you talk to is unique, okay, yeah. And you can't really put them in a persona, okay, when you're sat in front of them. You can't generalize about what you think that they're actually going through, okay? So you have to have that one-to-one conversation and really understand on a personal level what they're actually going through, okay?
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, audience personas do help in terms of a marketing strategy and what have you, but when it comes to sales, there is nothing like having that one-to-one conversation, building rapport with them, building an understanding, and then talking about, you know, their pain points and aspirations, okay? And at that level, it's all about having basic communication skills, and that now takes me on to the challenge that we're facing right now, is that everyone is putting technology in the way of a good one-to-one conversation. Okay. So I'll share a story. I went to a show here in Manchester in the summer, and it's all about data storage. And there was, I saw a CRM company, they were a CRM developer, and I was reviewing my own personal CRM. Went along, got curious, asked all the right questions. And I expected someone to turn around and say, well, let's get a date in the calendar and we can actually talk more. Guess what they did? They said, right, can I scan your badge? And somebody will get back in touch with you. And they came and they followed up 10 days later.
Yeah.
Yeah. And none of the conversation that we actually had was actually acknowledged in the follow-up. It was just very generic.
I love this because this is exactly what I talk to people every day.
Yeah.
And very interestingly, you know, Lee, I just want to mention, I spend equal amount of time talking to attendees, right?
Yeah.
And I ask them across exhibitions and trade shows, what popped out at you?
Yeah.
Where did you have a aha experience in any of the booth?
Yeah.
And never they said yes.
Yeah.
And if I said, can you recall one great moment you had? Well, yeah, I met an old friend whom I had not met for 5 years, and he had come to the... That's the aha moment for them. Nothing to do with the exhibition, nothing to do with what they have, what stalls they have been to and what booths they have been to. Nothing that, oh my God, I went there and these guys really knew what I was looking for, and or they knew my business and they told me some very interesting facts. Nothing.
Nothing. Yeah, because we don't focus on the human element, because, again, going back to their strategy, is that exhibitors are being taught that they've got to scan badges, okay? And if I look at the American strategy, we worked on Dreamforce, we worked at Black Hat, and clients come to us and say that we need your team to help us scan. Our target is 1,500 badge scans this week, okay, during the show, okay? And it's purely badge scans, okay? So if you're looking for badge scans, my philosophy is that just go to LinkedIn, okay? Just download 1,500 names, okay, and just send them emails, okay? And there is no value of going to a trade show. Yes, you collect all that data of 1,500 names, but what good is it? Okay, you can put them in the funnel, and we're being taught the wrong things. Okay, we're being taught that numbers are the most important thing. We've got to get X amount of leads. We've got to, hit X amount of target and so on. But what we don't realize is it's all about the quality, not the quantity. Okay,
absolutely.
And we've worked with a client, for example, where their previous strategy was all about, scanning badges at pharmaceutical fairs. You know, they'd give their sales team a badge scanner from the organizer and say, right, you're going to scan, the target would be like 90 per day per person, all right? And once we started working with them, they only got, the next show, they only got 62 qualified leads. But you know what? They actually had a better ROI from those 62 leads.
Of course.
Okay. And they had more meaningful conversations. Okay. And their sales team weren't running around doing cold calls with all those badge scans. Okay.
Right.
Because they actually had a very specific follow-up process. They had a very specific form that they actually filled in. And they'd actually set up the meeting actually at the booth, the follow-up meeting at the booth, okay? Mm-hmm. So, and this is it, the question I always ask is this being driven by the technology companies, the guys who provide the software, for the badge scans? Is it being driven by, our laziness in terms of not asking the right questions or being afraid to ask, okay, the customer, so where do you want to take this conversation?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So I'm really intrigued as to who's actually driving this thing about, we've got to have 1,500 badge scans. Where does it come from?
Absolutely. And it's the same psychology which makes us send out hundreds and thousands of millions of cold emails every day.
Yeah.
Billions, I think.
Yeah.
And not see that, it worked at one time when it was a novelty. It worked 20 years back.
Yeah.
It doesn't work anymore. I tell people, you can walk from New York to San Francisco. You can.
Yeah, yeah.
But would you do that?
Yeah, no.
I mean, that's not a very efficient way of doing it, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, why would you do this?
Yeah.
And they don't have a good answer because they are focused, as you said, on the wrong KPIs. It's about it's activity-based KPIs and not outcome-based KPIs.
Absolutely, yeah. It's all activity-based, yeah.
Yeah, and the theory, in my head, the theory is they don't want to do that because then it becomes very, they become very accountable.
Yeah.
So if it is fuzzy,
yeah.
If it is like, we have done this, we have scanned 1,500 badges.
Yeah.
Job is done. I mean, I think I've done my job, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And I've passed the buck to somebody else.
Yeah, yeah. And everyone pats each other on the back and it's a great job. And then 6 months later, the CFO is looking at the pipeline And we're hitting, I use the example of you just said, mentioned the email. Okay. Mm. When was the last time you actually bought something of someone who actually emailed you?
I can't recall.
Never, probably. I can't remember the last time I bought something because somebody emailed me.
Yeah.
And it's the same with exhibitions. And if we're doing badge scans, when was the last time you remembered talking to someone who scanned your badge? You don't.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I think the exhibition industry has a lot to answer for. Okay, because the organizers provide these tools, okay, yeah. Like the batch scans and the software companies, they have these great data capture stuff. But where is the real value being provided, saying, right, where is the matchmaking taking place? Yeah. Where is the, asking the right questions? And really get to know our people to avoid, because it literally takes 3 to 4 questions to ask someone to determine whether they're right fit for your company or not. Okay.
Yeah.
And if we can't upskill our people to be able to do that and to be able to converse, okay, without technology getting in the way, and I think the trade show industry will be in danger if you look at what's going on today around the globe with Generation X and Generation Z relying very much on, conversations through the phone. I read in the Times yesterday, it's a great article, which I'm going to send to you, is that Generation X and Generation Z are afraid to ask challenging questions on social media, or they just want general agreeableness, okay? And our new generations are actually afraid to challenge people. That's quite scary, that, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you can see how something like AI and the way we are proposing to use it.
Yeah.
Can actually dumbify, if there is a word like that,
yeah,
your ability to actually judge things for yourself. I mean, that's what makes us human, right?
Yeah, oh, absolutely, yeah.
And if we stop judging and leave that to technology, yeah. I mean, I run a tech company and I think we are building something interesting, but I would totally be horrified if people are not applying mind to the use of this technology.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you look at social media, for example, this is another example I use. What was social media started for, okay, is to share information with friends far, far away, okay?
Yeah.
And it's completely turned on its head, and it's actually now making us antisocial.
Yeah.
Okay? Yeah. You go to restaurants and you look at, complete families just on their cell phones and
Absolutely.
Tablets and things like
Absolutely.
That. And the trade shows were at one point human to human interaction events. Okay. And now what you have is a technology fest, okay, where everyone is going to an event, they have to register on a piece of tech, okay? They go there, their badge is scanned, okay, with a badge scanner, and then they come home, they get an email, okay? Then they get bombarded on social media. So what's actually happened to the outer conversation?
Yeah. It's very, very, very pertinent, because what you're saying is that we are actually dehumanizing a thing which was designed to be very human, which came out of our human needs to connect and talk and share.
Absolutely, yeah.
And we are sort of pushing it towards a dehumanized mode.
Yeah.
Instead of increasing the human interaction, so the tech enabling more human interaction.
Absolutely, yeah.
We are replacing the human interaction with tech.
Yeah.
And no wonder we are disconnected and we don't know and we
Absolutely, yeah.
We live in a completely make-believe world of ours, thinking that we understand the buyer. or our customer?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and we're creating more anxiety. Okay. And again, research has shown that people are more anxious. Okay.
Yeah.
And another aspect that we kind of explore in our workshops is the attendee journey. Okay. And we look at the moment from the moment that they actually set out to go to the event. Okay. What kind of journey do they actually go on? Okay.
Yeah.
And by the time an exhibitor says hello to them, how many negative experiences they've actually had, how much anxiety have they actually gone through? And is it any wonder when people are actually pushing technology that they become more anxious and then there's a disconnect, okay, because what they're actually going through?
Can you elaborate a bit on this? I think this is very, very important.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. So it's all about walking a mile in the attendee's shoes. Okay, so what happens? Okay, so I decide that I am going to, let's say, Mobile World Congress in February. Okay, so it's 4 days. There'll be 150,000 people there or something like that. And there will be approximately 1,500 exhibitors or 2,000 exhibitors. I don't know what the latest figures are for Mobile World Congress, but it's a huge show. And I pay, I don't know, 2,000 euros for the registration ticket. and then the flights, and then I pay 50% more for the hotels. Okay.
Yeah.
And then the taxi drivers decide to go on strike. Okay. So I've got, you know, to navigate my way from the airport. So first of all, I've got that journey to navigate from my house to my airport. Okay. And what I have to go through, you know, the security, checking in, and then the wait at the airport, and then all the anxiety of, you know, flying and having to cope with all the noise and everything else. Then you get to the customs, or you get through to the security, the border control. Okay, you have to queue up to get your passport stamped. And then obviously you get to the hotel. You have to navigate. If you take a taxi, you have the anxiety of, like, you may have a really bad taxi driver, like I did in Cologne, and I thought my life was going to, you know, flash before my eyes. And then you get to the hotel, okay? You've just come away from your family. You're alone, okay? You have all the work pressures, okay, as well, because you've obviously, if you're a C-level exec, okay, you've got loads and loads of worries, you know, the operations, the sales, the finance, everything else running through your head. Then obviously, if you're a family-orientated person, you've got, obviously, you're leaving your family behind. And then you get to the event. What do we do? There's a big registration queue. Okay. So we have to navigate that. And then we finally, hit the entrance. And what are we faced with? 1,500 exhibitors where anxiety, like sensory overwhelm, where do you actually start? Okay. Mm. And the software, the registration process doesn't help because you get asked loads and loads of questions. Okay, how much do I spend? When am I in the market for it? Like, in some registration, you get like 30, 40 questions. Okay.
Yeah.
The registration app, okay, a lot of recommendations. You know, you think, why am I getting these recommendations? So some apps, they won't even give you a recommendation. Okay. Yeah. And your information goes to the exhibitors. So you start walking around and you don't know where to start. So, and how do you possibly manage to find the people that you need to find in amongst, you know, 2,000 exhibitors? Okay. And you have to walk around. You have to walk halls and halls and halls to maybe find that one exhibitor that you actually wanted to talk to. Okay. So it's really kind of a really lonesome experience when you really think about it, right?
Right.
Yeah, you've got to go to an exhibition and you've got 3 days, and then you're subjected to things like, can I scan your badge? Okay. Or I went to Cityscape in Dubai, the salespeople is obviously, it's a real estate show, and you weren't left alone for a minute. Even when you went to the bathroom, there was a real estate salesperson waiting outside the restrooms, right? So it's like, as an attendee, okay, why bother going to, if we're as exhibitors and organizers, we're going to put these kind of experiences together, okay? Why should attendees bother anymore? Okay, because it's becoming dehumanizing, as you said. Okay,
right.
So we actually have, as attendees, we have so much pain that we actually get to go through to get this event. So isn't it our job as event organizers to say, let's create the best possible experience? Let's have a concierge service where in the app, okay, based on people's pain points and aspirations, we give them a personalized journey so they can get to go where they need to be and speak to the people that they need to talk to, okay?
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, how effective, unless obviously you do your homework, okay, yourself, and you look through all of the exhibitors, and even there was a search list of the exhibitors. I think, where was it? I think it was IMEX, so it was another event where you were trying to get matches for the types of companies that you wanted to talk to. And once you'd actually researched the company and actually booked your meeting with them, it actually threw you back, and you had to start the process all over again to find the list of companies that you wanted to talk to.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of work that needs to be done to make that attendee experience really valuable for that attendee. Otherwise, we're in danger again of losing those attendees.
Absolutely.
Sorry to be such a negative.
Well, if we don't raise the issues, and that's precisely what we are trying to do on this podcast as well, Lee. I mean, this is not to say everything is great and we have recovered 95% from the pandemic days and we are good and everybody's back on the floor and things are great.
Yeah.
I think that will be a very unwise thing to do.
Yeah.
Because what we are talking of are fundamental issues. People can theoretically say, I don't need to go to a trade show.
Yeah.
I have all the information. If that's all I'm going to get, I can get it anyway.
Absolutely, yeah.
They will come because finally I'm going to spend the money.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, absolutely. As you said, with AI coming in, AI will be able to find the perfect solutions for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
and it will find, you know, who you want to do business with, whether you can do research and everything. And if we don't provide those great human to human experiences or engagement, okay, we're in danger of losing attendees and exhibitors for that matter. Because if there's no attendees, there's no exhibitors.
Absolutely. Yeah. Before we move on to the follow-up bit, can you sort of touch upon when you don't have, as an exhibitor, you don't have the right people, what do you see actually? I mean, more than when you don't have, my question is that do you see use of external subject matter experts being hired to be part of the booth of exhibitors? Do you see that, or are they only hiring people for hosting people, but not so much as those who would help them connect and have meaningful conversations with their prospects?
There's a whole industry where where exhibitors have hired external staffing for hostessing, for the aesthetics, if you like, of the booth. But Our business, when I started 17 years ago, it was all about one principle, and that was helping people engage attendees in conversation and filtering them. Okay, so we've always had that business model where we actually hire actors and actresses to actually initially engage with attendees, break the ice with them, ask the questions, because those actors and actresses are not actually afraid of rejection. Okay. And then right. We also hire specialist presenters, okay, subject matter experts. So people who can actually learn about the product and service and be able to deliver it in an engaging and fun way. Okay. So mm-hmm. There's a whole industry that actually supports exhibitors. It's mainly in the US. The further east you go, it's more about entertainment and hospitality. Okay. But in the US, there's a whole industry that is focused on helping exhibitors to engage with attendees on a very high professional level. Okay, despite me saying like scanning badges and things like that, there are companies who are taking customer engagement or prospect engagement to a whole new level.
And what percent of exhibitors do you think are actually using these services?
Less than 1%. Not enough.
Sort of answers my question.
Yeah.
I mean, I cannot figure out, I can't put my finger on what makes people spend money and not focus on getting ROI out of that. I mean, I just can't sort of add them up.
Yeah. Neither can I. I mean, if I knew the answer, I'd be a rich man. But again, I think it goes down to legacy in the company, because sometimes companies, especially larger companies, they have a budget and they need to spend it. Okay. And, and a lot of the time it's, with traditional B2B exhibitions in the older industries like the manufacturing, and it's all down to having that budget and using trade shows as an excuse to, have drinks with the boys, so to speak. So there is that kind of mentality that still exists in the industry, but what I see is that, again, it's the lack of education for the CFOs, for the CMOs, in trying to understand how to spend the money wisely, okay? And really looking at working backwards, like I said before, rather than working forwards, okay? So understanding that if somebody makes a decision that we're doing an exhibit, okay, the first question that should be asked is why? Okay, and then the second question is, what's our outcome? Okay, what do we actually want to get out of it? And then everything else should take place after that, okay? What tends to happen now is we're doing an exhibition, how much have we got to spend? And we start with the booth build, the booth design, and that's where the focus actually goes. I would probably say that less than 5% of exhibitors actually start to focus on the why and then the customer journey. What CMOs and CFOs should be doing is looking at, why are we exhibiting? Okay. What is our outcome? And what does the customer journey look like that will actually lead us to the customer outcome, to our ideal outcome?
Right. I think we can delve into this again.
Yeah.
And possibly, we should try to get some exhibitors into this conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
Why you do what you do.
Yeah. I think it would be good to actually have an exhibitor, an organizer, an exhibit stand builder to get all three perspectives.
I think we should try and do that sooner than later. I think there are questions we are raising which need answers, and it's good if somebody found the answer to be able to share it. I think it'll make perfect sense.
Oh, absolutely.
Just to finally touch upon the follow-up conundrum. I think you mentioned to me, and I also sort of saw the same numbers, and also your post, right, on the follow-up. That close to 70% of exhibitors do not follow up of all those badges that they have scanned.
Yeah.
Right?
So after the first interaction, there is... I did some research on the follow-up process, and there were some statistics going about 70% of exhibitors not following up. That's not actually true. I don't know where that statistic has actually come from, but the true statistic for me is, or the more worrying statistic, is that 70% of leads are not followed up after the first thank you email. Okay, I think most companies are now sending the thank you emails for coming to the booth, but then after that, there is no formal process, okay, to actually follow up with the leads, because again, if they're badge scans, it's very difficult, because if you face, for example, and I can show you a stack of business cards. Okay, here we go. So imagine that you're a sales rep, okay, and you get given the lead forms, and you have to go through them one by one, and you get rejections. First four or five, you ring up and you say, hi, Mr. Prospect, it's Lee from Expo Stars. We talked at the exhibition. And the usual answer is, oh, thanks for calling, but I was actually only interested in collecting the special teddy bear that you had. I wanted to collect it for my daughter, okay? Yeah. That's like, and you get five or six of those conversations. As a human being, you get disheartened. Okay. Mm. And then you say, all the leads are going to be like this. Okay. So it's really like looking for a needle in a haystack. And what happens after maybe the 10th call, you start saying, well, all of them must be like that. And you just leave them to one side. Okay. Because of that frustration. Okay. Because of our innate human laziness that we just say that everything must be the same. Right. So where a really good follow-up strategy is, if you've done your customer journey on the booth, at the end of it, you should be asking, so Mr. Prospect, how do you actually want to take this conversation forward? And let them give you the permission.
Yep.
Okay. Because number one, you can check whether your pitch has actually landed. Okay. Mm. How much interest do they actually have? Okay. And if they're keen, okay, they will say, well, let's have a discovery call. Okay. And then you can say, well, let's, everyone has a mobile phone these days, and a mobile phone has a calendar. Okay. And you can actually say, let's check your availability for the next week or so. It won't be a good time. And you actually make the appointment there and then.
Yeah. Okay?
And we worked with an exhibitor, another pharma exhibitor, and their sole ROI or ROO was actually based on the number of meetings they actually booked, the number of follow-up meetings they actually booked, okay, after that journey on the booth, all right? Yeah. And everybody can do that on the booth, okay? So what it does, it actually helps you determine what is a qualified lead, what is a hot lead, okay, what is a warm lead, and what is a cold lead, or someone who maybe is not ready yet, okay, but you can definitely put them in the funnel. So what it allows you to do then is allows you to prioritize the warm leads in terms of the follow-up.
Yeah, okay? I agree.
And then the cold leads, okay, you can just put into the marketing funnel, and they can get the newsletters. They can get the invites to the follow-on events and so on. Okay, so
absolutely,
that is good practice. But if you've scanned 1,500 badges and you give those leads to your sales reps and you ask them to call them individually, you might as well, it is a call process.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially because you're not capturing what that interaction was.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you knew... And if you had captured that interaction, you could now go back. Even if you have a stack of 70 or 80 or 100 cards, you can first go back to the conversation and make a sense. Okay, this guy was just there for the swag and not really from the conversation you can make out. If you're asking questions and you're getting evasive answers and that's all that you're getting, you know that it's not possibly, it's better to put him into nurturing, or maybe he's not even my target customer. And because it's an open house and anybody can come and pick up the pair of socks or cap or whatever. And I must tell you, I mean, there is this friend of mine runs a large tech company, nearly 1,000 people between US and India. And in one tech conference, they were one of the sponsors. So they're at this point, they're spending about $70,000 sponsoring that conference. And they have a booth, which is a large booth. And they have six people and who have all flown in there. So my sense is that they're spending about $100,000 at that point. And they do this huge giveaway. They have 1,400 leads. And I asked him later, why do you call them leads? They're not leads. They're just names and emails or whatever. They're not leads. Don't call them leads. Because that confuses, that terminology confuses everybody.
Absolutely.
Anyway, 1 year down the line, they're having one conversation. Okay. So out of that 1,400, only 70 were sort of qualifiable leads. Those were leads. So that's like 5% of the 1,400. And of that, they were having seven conversations, like 9 months into the event, from the event. And 1 year from the event, there was one conversation. And they're hoping that they'll convert it for like $50,000. And hopefully they'll recover some money. The point is that you're right. I mean, bad scanning is a bad ROI. It's like going and buying leads from somebody who, from one of those database companies who are saying,
database companies,
this 30,000 people are looking for your stuff. They're not.
It's that illusion that we have, that we give ourselves, that if it's a high number, okay, that's what the FD wants to hear. So, and I think especially that's true with a lot of tech companies that have actually, you know, got all this capital, to actually spend in terms of investment to grow their company. And to the shareholders, they're saying, we've gone to this conference, we've got 1,500 batch scans leads, and that's what they're doing, okay? And then is it any wonder that all these tech startups are beginning to fail or have failed? I think 70 it's a very scary statistic. About 70% of startups go bust within three or four years. Is it any wonder if this is the kind of process that they're actually going through?
PitchLink makes buying easy by enabling high quality engagement between buyers and sellers. Through its presentation and discussion modules, sellers create customized sales narratives using sales collaterals and personal videos and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement process. PitchLink requires no installation or download, contains and manages the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversations. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without interruption. Connect with us on LinkedIn or visit TradeshowEngage.com. That is TradeshowEngage.com.
Yeah, I think for me, just to recap it all, I think we need to reclaim the art of human conversation so that exhibitions can carry on as a human first philosophy, okay? I think for that, we have to find ways of using technology in such a way that encourages true human-to-human connection, okay? And I think where we're taking away and using technology, where we're actually taking away those serendipity or, you know, the quality of our conversations, I think we need to really need to address that in our industry.
Fantastic. Lee, thank you so much for your time and such a nice and insightful conversation. I really appreciate and I hope to talk to you again sometime very soon.
Look forward to it. Thank you very much for having me, Subhanjan.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of episodes featuring great conversations on engaging your booth visitors and maximizing your ROI from your trade show investments. Subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you do not miss a single episode. Thanks for listening. Thank you for being with us today on the Trade Show Podcast, the podcast of record for the trade show and events industry. Here we talk to movers and shakers of the $50 billion trade show industry and identify ideas, challenges, tactics and strategies to leverage the first party intent inherent in the trade show business. We hope this conversation helped inform and motivate as we all navigate a rapidly changing business environment. For us, these are enlightening conversations enriched with knowledge and expertise. We encourage you to go out and implement some of the ideas we discussed today. We hope to have you with us again in the next exciting episode of the Trade Show Podcast. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platform like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcast from, and give us a rating while you are at it. This is a Bizcast original podcast and is produced for Pitchlink, the next generation visitor engagement platform where our mission is to make buying easy. Hosted by Shubhanjan Sarkar and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time and have a wonderful day.